Okay, this morning we'll be in chapter 19 of Isaiah. And I'll start by reading it and then we'll come back. The burden of Egypt, verse 1. Behold, the Lord rides upon a swift cloud and shall come into Egypt, and the idols of Egypt shall be moved at his presence, and the heart of Egypt shall melt in the midst of it. And I will set the Egyptians against the Egyptians, and they shall fight every one against his brother, and every one against his neighbor, city against city, and kingdom against kingdom. And the spirit of Egypt shall fail in the midst thereof, and I will destroy the counsel thereof, and they shall seek to the idols, and to the charmers, and to them that have familiar spirits, and to the wizards. And the Egyptians will I give over into the hand of the cruel lords, and a fierce king shall rule over them, saith the Lord of hosts. And the waters shall fail from the sea, and the river shall be wasted and dried up, and they shall turn the rivers far away, and the brooks of defense shall be emptied and dried up, the reeds and the flags shall wither. The paper reeds by the brooks, by the mouth of the brooks, and everything sown by the brooks shall wither, be driven away, and be no more. And the fishers also shall mourn, and all they that cast angle into the brooks shall lament, and they shall spread nets upon the waters, they that spread nets upon the waters shall languish. Moreover, they that work in fine flax and they that weave network shall be confounded. And they shall be broken in the purposes thereof, all that make sluices and ponds for fish. Surely the princes of Zoan are fools. The counsel of the wise counselors of Pharaoh is become brutish. How say ye to Pharaoh, I am the son of the wise, the son of the ancient kings? Where are they? Where are they wise men? And let them tell you now, and let them know what the Lord of hosts has purposed upon Egypt. The princes of Zoan are become fools. The princes of Noph are deceived. They have also seduced Egypt, even they that are the stay of the tribes thereof. The Lord has mangled a perverse spirit in the midst thereof, and they have caused Egypt to err in every work thereof, as a drunken man staggers in his vomit. Neither shall there be any work for Egypt, which the head or the tail, the branch or the rush may do. In that day shall Egypt be likened to women, and it shall be afraid and fear because of the shaking of the hand of the Lord of hosts, which he shakes over it. And the land of Judah shall be a terror unto Egypt. Every one that makes mention thereof shall be afraid in himself because of the counsel of the Lord of hosts, which he has determined against it. In that day shall five cities in the land of Egypt speak the language of Canaan, and swear to the Lord of the hosts, one shall be called the city of destruction. In that day shall there be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar at the border thereof of the Lord to the Lord. And it shall be for a sign and for a witness unto the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt. For they shall cry to the Lord because of the oppressors, and he shall send them a Savior, a great one, and he shall deliver them. And the Lord shall be known to Egypt, and the Egyptians shall know the Lord in that day, and shall do sacrifice and oblation. Yea, they shall vow a vow unto the Lord and perform it. And the Lord shall smite Egypt, he shall smite and heal it. They shall return to the Lord, and he shall be entreated of them and shall heal them. In that day shall there be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria. The Assyrians shall come to Egypt, and the Egyptians to Assyria, and the Egyptians shall serve with the Assyrians. In that day shall Israel be the third part with Egypt and Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land, whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, saying, Blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, mine inheritance. There's a bunch of stuff in there. My. Remember that this is a spiritual book. We have to look at things in symbolism. This book is written in parabolic language. The whole Bible is parabolic. We have to see what the Spirit is trying to tell us in the message itself, not the words written on the pages, but what is the symbolism? What is he trying to tell us in the process? You know, he's not trying to tell us about a big heavy burden that somebody from Egypt's carrying on their back. That's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about something different, totally misinterpreted anyway, but let me go ahead and start with it. The burden, the word burden literally means an utterance concerning Egypt. Not a burden, but an utterance. An utterance concerning Egypt. And Egypt is a symbol of what?
The world
or the outer court. There's three realms here. As we talked about in the, as I read in the last verse there in verse 25, he said, "Blessed be Egypt, my people," that's the whole world, "Assyria, the work of my hands," that's the Pentecostal realm, that's Passover in Egypt, Pentecost in Assyria, "and Israel, my inheritance," the third realm, tabernacles, okay? So when we're talking about Egypt here, we're talking about the Passover experience of it. And he said, "Behold, the Lord rides upon a swift cloud." We know that clouds represent something. What is it? It's overcomers. Like he said in Hebrews, you're encompassed about by so great a cloud of witnesses, right? It's talking about the overcomers. "And he shall come into Egypt." Did it say he was going to come close to Egypt?
No.
Near Egypt? To the border of Egypt? He said, "Come into." Egypt is not a literal, we're not using it as a literal thing, it's symbolism. He's talking about everybody in the world. Didn't Jesus say, "I am the light that came from above," and that was the Christ within him speaking, said, "I'm the light that came from above that lights every man that comes into the world." And just same thing, he's making the same statement here, that God will, the Lord will ride upon a swift cloud, and that's will come in, and the overcomer, and that's talking about the Christ, and he'll come into all of Egypt, see? And Egypt being the world or the outer court or the Passover experience. "And the idols of the world," or that outer court, like Easter bunnies and eggs and all that stuff. It's all carnal mind, right? But in that Passover experience, that's where all the idols are. He's telling you that. "The idols of Egypt shall be moved at his presence." Where does God live today? Where is God?
Within.
He's within us. So when he comes in, the idols are going to be removed. Does that mean they're all coming out at one time?
No.
It's a process. And as he comes in, he's going to start removing. And it's a process of removing him throughout our lives.
Be too overwhelming to it all happen.
Sure, it's got a like temper us to it, little at a time. "And the heart," and we know the heart is what? The mind of the world, or the outer court, or the Passover experience, shall melt, literally dissolve, in the midst of not it, but them. In the midst of them. So my worldly thinking will pass away. Did not Ezekiel say, "I'm going to take out," the Spirit of God spoke through Ezekiel and said, "I'm going to take out your old stony heart and give you a new soft one," right? That's the mind of Christ. So we know that something's not right here with the language. We have to see the pattern that he's laying everything in. Okay? And in verse 2, God goes ahead, and we know that God is in control of how many things?
All
things. And look what he says here. "And I," and that's God, right? Mm-hmm. Speaking through the prophet Isaiah, "will set the Egyptians against the Egyptians, and they shall fight everyone against his brother and everyone against his neighbor, and city against city and kingdom against kingdom." What do we see in the world today? Everybody fighting everybody. Families fighting, brothers fighting, sisters fighting, mom and dad's fighting, kids and dads and moms fighting. Everybody in the whole world, they're all doing it. They all justify it because in their thinking, they're right and everybody else is wrong.
Strife.
Oh, just total confusion and strife and chaos. And that's what he said he was going to do. And he said, and he's telling you what's going to happen here in verse 3. "And the spirit of Egypt," that's the spirit of that worldly carnal thinking, right? "Shall fail." Literally, it will be demoralized. They'll be demoralized in the midst thereof. So the mind of the natural man, the carnal mind, will be demoralized, okay, or fail in the midst thereof, in the midst of them. Where's that at? It's the mind. "And I will destroy the counsel thereof." He said, "I'll destroy the counsel of this carnal mind," where it doesn't even make sense. "And they shall seek to the idols and to the charmers," or the ones that speak to the dead, "and to them that have familiar spirits, and to the wizards." You know why? Because what they trusted in themselves failed. So now they're going to look to the outside, somebody else. And isn't that exactly what the church world has been training us to do? The church world has trained us to look to a preacher, look to somebody else. Don't look within yourself. Whatever you do, look to somebody external to find your answer. Isn't that what they train you?
Don't look to God.
Huh?
Don't look to God.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Don't look within yourself. Always look out there. Find somebody out there to help you get where you're going. God's saying, I'm within you. Let me deal with you. See, let me, the spirit that's within you, deal with you. That's the way he set it up.
Go to a psychiatrist.
Yeah, go to a worldly psychiatrist to get your spiritual life in order. I've had a few issues with them in the past, since I have family members that are into that realm, you know, into those labels after your name, you know. So that's okay. That's what they want. And the Egyptians, he says, I will give over into the hand of a cruel master, and a fierce king shall rule over them, saith the Lord of hosts, or the Lord of the masses. Who do you think this, when we say the Lord of hosts, what do you usually think of? I really want to dig into this word for a reason.
The Lord of hosts.
The Lord of hosts, what do you think?
I would think in some of like for Catholics and those that do communion, they're thinking of the Lord over the
certain people. Okay, and that's
so
what
you think. What I think, or
yes, I'm telling what you think.
The Lord of hosts. I think those are my positive thoughts. The host is my.
Okay, well, I want to open up another view to this thing and show you, because it's something that's enlightened. That God has enlightened me in. It's in the language, but I just never. I looked at it, but never saw it, never registered, and it finally registered. It says the Lord of the masses. Okay, masses is not a few, like the church world would want it to look at, okay? It's not individual like we might want to think, but it's everybody, the mass, the whole, okay? It's all of them, see? It's all people. He's the Lord over all the world. Whether they're, he said he's the Lord over the living and the dead, didn't he? Wouldn't that pretty well qualify about everybody? Right? So this, when we see this Lord of hosts, we're not thinking about just over the good people like the church world wants to see it as. That's what they portray it as. But he's the Lord over all people. Okay? So he said, the Lord of hosts, the Lord of all. We could just put the word all in there, and it would say it correctly. So he said he's going to turn them over, and they're going to serve this cruel master and this fierce king. Who do you think that is?
It's my carnal mind.
It's your carnal mind. Didn't Paul say in the New Testament basically the same thing? He said he's going to turn them over so that they may be turn them over to Satan, that they be buffeted in the flesh, that their spirit be saved, right? That's what it's all about. Knowing that, turn you over to your own thinking. Romans say turn them over to a reprobate mind, didn't he? There's a lot of ways it's said, but saying the same thing. Verse 5, it goes on and says, and the waters shall fail from the sea. What's the water represent? The Word, okay? Here it represents the Word. The water shall fail from the sea, which is humanity, as a source, okay? And the river, and that speaks, that's humanity rather, and the river speaks of a source, shall be wasted and dried up. The water comes from the river and runs into the sea, doesn't it? So the river speaks of a source. So their source of everything they got is going to be dried up. Why is it going to be dried up? Because of their carnality, because of seeking to the wizards and the charmers and the ones that speak to the dead and the familiar spirits and all that stuff, because they're not hearing God, because they're not recognizing God, they're not giving God any credit for anything, they might say they are, but that, does that mean they are?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything, it just means they're saying things. See? And just like this morning, this being the, quote, Easter weekend that they call it, Easter not even being in the scripture, just a mistranslation from Pasha. But anyway, they say they're giving God glory. But wearing a fancy set of clothes into church and making somebody in this, especially in this hard time, to go to church this morning, they feel like they have to have new clothes on or they'll feel like outcasts. Now, putting somebody under that kind of pressure, you tell me that's godly. To make somebody feel like a piece of dirt because they can't afford to buy new clothes, but they want to love God, and the church is telling them, if you don't wear good clothes, you're not welcome in our place.
Yeah.
Now, there's nothing godly about it. I'm sorry. That's just the truth. So anyway, where did I leave off there in 5?
That's just respect for a person.
Sure it is. It's a game they're playing. A religious social club has nothing to do with God. They don't even know how to worship God. They think they're worshiping by clapping their hands and saying things, and that's not it. The true worship is lifestyle, being like Him. And doesn't the book say that we are to be, in this world, to be just like Him? Mm-hmm. Now in this world. They missed it, okay? But anyway, their source of what their spirituality is coming from, they think their spirituality is coming, is all going to be dried up. Who's going to dry it up? God is. And they shall not turn, but they shall reject the rivers far away. That means what's coming, the source from God, they're rejecting it. And the brooks of defense, and that's literally the brooks of Egypt, shall be emptied and dried up, and the reeds and the rushes or the water plants shall wither. What do you think this is talking about? The reeds and the flags shall wither. Okay, that's basically where we're going. But it's saying that the plants that live in this water, the things that live there, that draw their life from the water that He just said He's going to dry up, are going to dry up. So all this religious stuff that gives people this temporary fix that they're all looking for a temporary fix, not the permanent fix.
This man-made water.
Man-made
process.
It's all about the carnal stuff that religion has made up. He said, I'm going to cause it to wither up and dry, and when it gives you no more satisfaction, you're going to look for another source, aren't you? When you lose your source of what you think is life, and you realize it's not, immediately you're going to look for another direction, aren't you? Another source. Now, this is not corporate. Hello. Make sure you understand this is individual. Each person comes to this place in their life by themselves. And you've got to come to a place where you realize, I have to find my source, and I can't get it from a group of people that's all sitting there talking about things that they've been talking about for thousands of years and have never changed anything. There's got to be something else. And when your mind starts telling you there's got to be something else, it's time for you to change your address, isn't it? To move on. Verse 7, it goes on and says, the paper reads by the brooks. And that word brooks literally is the Nile, as a source of Egypt, you know. I'm looking at something here, and I'm kind of baffled at what I wrote. A little note. Okay. Say it again. And the reeds by the brooks, it's the Nile. It's a source of Egypt, where the word came from. It will no longer exist. That's what he's saying. It's no longer going to exist. There's no more source for that word. Doesn't that sound like the place where Ezekiel said, I'm going to take out the old heart and give you a new one? If you take the old one out, you can no longer, there's no source any longer, is there?
You're going to draw from the
that source.
Egyptian source that you once.
You can't, because it's been removed. It's dried up and died. It's the same thought process. And it says, everything sown by the brooks shall wither and be driven away and be no more. So, guess what? God's going to do it. Is that what you're doing, or who's doing it? God's doing it for you. See, God has made a choice here, and He said, I'm going to do it, and it's going to be to everybody, but like Paul said in Corinthians, Christ the first fruits, and then every man in his own order. All humanity, but in their own order, the one God sets up. And it says, the fishers or the fishermen shall also groan, and all they that cast hooks into the Nile shall lament, and they that spread nets upon the face of the waters shall languish. Moreover, they that work in fine linen, not flax, but fine linen, and they that weave networks or manufacture linen or try to manufacture their own righteousness, who would that maybe be?
The preachers.
The religious system, right? They're trying to manufacture their own righteousness. Shall be what?
Ashamed.
Or confounded or ashamed. You're right. See, they're going to be ashamed because they realize they can't do it on their own. If God doesn't, didn't Jesus make a statement, you can do nothing without me?
No.
That was the Spirit of God in him. And without the Spirit of God directing things, we're not going to accomplish anything. We have to be able to see this in the light that it was given to us in the Old Testament under the law, in symbolism, and then we have to be able to relate it to the New Testament, New Covenant, to make it prevalent in our lives today. And verse 10 says, and they shall be broken in the purposes. That means their purposes are going to fail, don't it? If his purposes prevail, what's going to happen to my purposes?
They're
going to fail. They can't make it. And all that makes sluices and ponds for fish. It's kind of funny because the word sluices isn't there.
That says make wages.
That's exactly what it should be. That's exactly right. That make wages. Wonder who that might be. It's them, send me your nickels and dimes. It's the one, it's the beggars on the airwaves, okay? We'll just say it there. And ponds for fish. Now, that's not exactly what it says. Does that shock you? It literally says that make wages and stagnant ponds. What's a stagnant pond? Religion. It is. That's what it represents, religion. For fish. And you know what the word for fish there is? It's nephesh. It means souls.
Ours don't say it that way.
Now, mine says all who make wages will be troubled of soul.
Yeah, but it says, but see, the word soul is in there. What's your say? Okay, but it says make stagnant ponds for the souls. So that's what the church world does. They make their own little pond here, and if you get outside this pond, they'll tell you to die. Now, how hard would it be to convince a fish that they were going to die when they got outside the pond? They got to have that water. See, even if it's stagnant water, it can keep them alive, see? And they're willing to wallow around in that slop because they're convinced by the man in the $1,000 suit that that's what it's, the truth is. And he has to be right because he's got a $1,000 suit on, drives a Mercedes, or has a chauffeur-driven limousine. You know, so he has to be right. And that's the trouble. Now the context changes. Surely the princes of Zoan... What do you think Zoan is? It's a city in Egypt, the world. It's talking about worldly princes. Are fools. The council of the wise counselors of Pharaoh, and Pharaoh represents the world too, he's the big man in the world, the carnal mind, is become brutish or stupid. How do you say to Pharaoh, I am the son of the wise, the son of an ancient king? Where are they? He says, where are they, not where are they, wise man? He should say, where are they now, wise man? Or the wise man, and let them tell you now, and let them know that the Lord of the masses, or all, has purposed upon the outer court or the world. If you're a wise man, you should be telling the whole world what God has purposed on them, shouldn't he? Not telling all these make-believe dreams and conjured-up thought processes, but you should be telling the world what God has purposed for them. When I see people today struggling, I don't tell them there's a devil beating them up. I tell them God is behind this thing. God is growing you into a mature person. And you'll never change until your thought process changes. You'll continue in the same place you're at until you change the way you think. What's the words metanoia mean?
Change your
knowledge or change the way you think. See? And until I do that, that's what we use the word for repentance. It's changing the way I think. If I don't change the way I think, I'll stay the same way I am until the day they take this body and throw it in the ground. Burn it or whatever they do.
You think you're supposed to stay in that nasty pond? You will.
If God wants you to stay in that pond, you can stay right there and wallow in that stagnant water, old green slimy stuff, all you want.
You become stagnant.
You'll be the stagnant pond. You'll be the pond. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you become part of it. And you know, things die in that stagnant water and just deteriorate and become part of that nasty system.
No fresh water going into it, so.
What choice have they got?
So if they change the way they think, they're putting fresh water into it. And
they're going to be looking for another source, ain't they?
Purifying the water.
Absolutely.
Pushing out that old stinky stuff.
Absolutely. Verse 13, right?
Mm-hmm.
The princes or the rulers of Zoan, that's lower Egypt, are become fools. And the princes of Nop, that's upper Egypt, are deceived. They have also seduced Egypt, all of Egypt, even they that are the stay or the cornerstones of the tribes thereof. He said, now if he hadn't put this, the tribes, the cornerstones of the tribes, we're talking about the leaders of Israel, aren't we? the tribes of Israel. That's what we're talking about, isn't it? Mm-hmm. He said, the stay of the tribes of Israel are deceived by the world. They've been seduced. He said that the leaders of Lower Egypt are fools, and the princes of Upper Egypt are deceived. And they have seduced Egypt. Yeah, all of Egypt, from the top to the bottom, every one of them. And doesn't the book say that everyone in the world is, what is it? I'm trying to say the words, I can't get the words out now. The whole world lies in deception. The whole world lies in deception. Isn't that what he's saying right there? Same words, same thought process, coming right out of the New Testament. And verse 14, the Lord has mingled a perverse spirit in the midst thereof. Who did the mingling?
The Lord
did. You can't blame some demon or some devil. God put it in there because he wanted it in there. And they have caused Egypt, or all of Egypt, to err in every work thereof. To err in how many works?
All.
As a drunken man staggers in his vomit. I don't know how many of you ever seen anything like that, but it's a pretty sad sight. When somebody gets in a state, they get drunk and vomit and can't even stand up, slipping, sliding. And that's the way the world is today. That's the way the church world is today. That's what the religious system is. There's no stability in that thing. And yet people are still in that stagnant pond.
They can't even really pick their face up.
No. That's why some of them drown that way. Yeah, they're a mess. Verse 15, neither shall there be any work for Egypt out of all of Egypt. There'll be no work. Which the head or the tail or the branch or rush may do. Now, there's no work they can do. You can't fix yourself. He's not talking about economic crisis coming on, which I'm sure there's some today preaching this same verse saying, yeah, look at the world today. There's no work. Everything's going to hell in a handbag because there's no economy and everything. This is not talking about the world economy. It's talking about the spiritual side of everything. See, there'll be no work for Egypt. There's no place for Egypt. If there's no work, there's no place for Egypt, is there? He's talking about between your ears, right up here on your head, right between your ears. There's no place for that thinking out of Egypt, that mindset.
Faith without works is dead.
Yep. Which the head or the tail, the branch or the rush may do. Remember in Isaiah 9? Let me back up just a few pages and read you something out of chapter 9, verse 14. Therefore the Lord will cut off from Israel head and tail, branch and rush in one day. The ancient are audible, he's the head, and the prophet that teaches lies, he is the tail. For the leaders of this people cause them to err, and they that are led of them are destroyed. Whew. Sounds like what we just talked about. That's in Isaiah 9, 14, 15, 16. And it's the same thing he's saying over here in chapter 19. Same thing. So he said, which the head or the tail, and he's talking about the negative side here, the head or the tail, or the branch or the rush. He said, every bit of it's going to be cut off, didn't he? So he's going to take all that religion out of you. That ought to make you happy, because this is not about taking off this church or cutting out that church. It's talking about taking the religion out of you.
Detox.
He's detoxing your entire spirit, getting all that garbage away from you. Okay? And it says, in that day, and what day is that?
Now.
It's now, the day of the Lord. All Egypt, in that day shall all Egypt be like unto women. Don't mean they're going to wear dresses and jewelry and put makeup on. It's going to be in the soulish realm. They're going to be soulish. All of Egypt will, and it shall be afraid and fear because of the what? The shaking of the hand, that's not right. That word shaking of the hand, those words should say the wave offering. Do you know what the wave offering is? Okay, it's a symbol. The wave offering is symbolism of the reality of the new covenant. The wave offering is the priest, and that represents Christ, going out in the field every day and picking, here's a stalk of wheat ripe, and here's one, there's two right there, I can get them two. And put them together. And when he gets them all together, he binds them with another stalk. And that was Christ, the first fruits, being bound together. And then he lifted him up and waved him. What do you think that was?
There's my beloved son. Son in whom I am well pleased.
This is the crucifixion. See, the sons that are truly crucified, the first fruit sons, that's what they're talking about, the shaking of the hand. This is the wave offering being offered back to God, okay? And you know what? The rest of them should quiver and shake with that. Because in the presence of the first fruit, in the presence of the Son, He said, I and the Father are what?
One.
So when they see you standing as a first fruit son of God, they should be quivering and shaking. Because they know they're nowhere near that. It will shake them. Didn't it say in Revelation that they would tremble and fear in the presence of the Lamb and His holy messengers? Same thing. All this is coming from New Testament, but the New Testament was written out of the Old Testament. The understanding of the Old Testament. Okay. At the hand of the Lord of hosts, the horde of the masses are all, which He not shakes but lifts up. See, and there's the lifting up of the wave offering, lifting it, not shaking it, but lifting it up. The English language doesn't do it any justice. That He lifts up over it. And the land of Judah, that's the overcomers, shall be a terror to Egypt or the world. Do you know what the third day people, and I'm not talking about a group of people that's better than anybody else. I'm just saying the people that God has chosen to bring to maturity first fruit, they're a terror to people sitting in the Passover and Pentecostal realms. It scares the fire out of them.
It starts making their idols shake.
It does shake their idols. It tears down all their toys that they play with. It messes up their sandbox. But that's okay. Everyone that makes mention thereof shall become afraid of himself, in himself. Be afraid where?
With them.
In himself. Mm-hmm. Because he realizes there's where it's really happening.
I'm losing my control.
I lost mine a long time ago. And that's what we have to realize. There's going to come a time when they're going to look and see you and know that it's something that's going to have to happen within them. Mm-hmm. Just like it's happened within you. Because of the counsel of the Lord of all, which He has determined against it. See, it's God's plan, and it's going to happen whenever He wants it to happen. You got no say in this thing. So this whole story about, oh, I went to the altar and I cried and I slobbered on a board and Jesus saved me. No, He saved you when He died on a tree thousands of years ago. And we'll take it to the real reality. He was the Lamb slain before the conception of the world, or the foundation of the world, what the King James says. Before the world was conceived, in His heart He already laid Himself out as a sacrifice. That's when you were saved. See, nobody got saved today or yesterday or the day before. Everybody got saved on the same day, even before we were created. We were saved by His death, burial, and resurrection before we ever come on this world.
Isn't this just saying like Goshen?
Sure it is.
In the land of Egypt.
Yep. We're sitting in the middle of it and just fine. Same thing.
And God's doing this, it ain't nothing about us.
It ain't about us, it's about what He's doing with everything else.
Just relax.
Leave the driving to us, is what they said on that commercial.
Better and better.
Yeah. What was that Greyhound commercial? Take the bus, leave the driving to us. See? In that day shall five cities, verse 18 says, in that day shall five cities in the land of Egypt speak the language of Canaan. Canaan's the lowland. That's the lower end of it, okay? The Canaanites, people of low degree. And swear to the Lord of hosts, the Lord of all, one shall be called the city of... What's that say?
Destruction.
Is that what it really says? No. It could be called the city of the sun. The city of the sun. S-U-N. So somebody's going to start somewhere, aren't they? Those people of low degree, the ones with humility, somewhere down there, they're going to start, even in Egypt.
Isn't the five cities the five senses?
Could very well be the five senses. Right? But one of them is going to be called the city of the sun. And in that day shall there be an altar to the Lord in the center of the land of Egypt. Where is the land of Egypt? Right on top of my head.
Trying to take over.
Yeah, it's that worldly thinking. And in the center of that, there's going to be an altar to the Lord. And a pillar near the border thereof of the Lord. What do you think that pillar near the Lord, near the border thereof to the Lord might be? Yeah, not quite. Read on in 20. And it shall be for a sign and for a witness unto the Lord of all in the land of Egypt or the world, because they shall cry to the Lord because of the oppressors, and he shall send them a Savior or a Deliverer, a great one, a great deliverer, to deliver, and he shall deliver them. Who do you think? What do you think we're talking about there? This pillar and this altar. What do you think that is?
The cross.
It's the cross. The cross he's talking about, that the pillar thing near the border. And then he's talking about the Christ, absolutely, as the deliverer he's sending to us. But what I'm talking about was before was the altar in the midst of the land. That would be like the brazen altar, you know, it's there, and the pillar is there for the cross, the landmark. And that cross is the landmark, isn't it? In the carnal mind, in the world. And it shall be for a sign, for a witness, for the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt, for they shall cry to the Lord because of the oppressors, and he shall send them a Savior to deliver them, and he shall deliver them. Did it say maybe he would deliver them if they ask him?
No.
He said he will send them to deliver them, and he shall deliver them. There's no doubt in that, is there? He's going to accomplish what he was sent there to do. And the Lord shall be known to Egypt, to all of Egypt, the whole world. And the Egyptians shall know the Lord in that day, in the day of the Lord, and shall do sacrifice and oblation. The oblation means a bloodless and voluntary sacrifice.
Cross.
See, no, not the cross, because there was blood shed at the cross.
Okay?
But this is something that they give. They're no longer going to do blood sacrifices. He was telling them right back there that the end of their sacrifices is coming. There's no more blood sacrifice. There's no need of killing animals and sacrificing animals to kill them, put the blood on something like some of the Jewish people still do some of that stuff, you know. The law was coming to an end. There's a new covenant coming. Okay. No more blood sacrifices. And they shall vow a vow to the Lord and perform it. So it means somebody's going to start telling the truth. How about that? That'd be a shock in the church world. Somebody told the truth.
Isn't that monster of Egypt?
What?
Wiped away out of your mind, that truth stands there.
Say it again.
Once the Egypt thoughts, your mind thoughts, the truth is standing there now.
Right. It's kind of like you said, well, about the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Once that tree has been cut down, the only tree left is what? Tree of life. Mm-hmm. See, so that's, and it does stand. In verse 22, it goes on and says, and the Lord shall smite Egypt. He shall smite it and heal it. Well, was it destruction or was it corrective? Was it punitive or corrective?
Corrective.
See, God smited Egypt to correct them, not to destroy. God's never meant to destroy. That's just the way that the translators translated, and the only way they knew how to translate. But that's not the pattern of God, is it? God doesn't destroy people. He heals them. He fixes them. He came here to correct them. And the only way he can correct them is to smite them a little bit, smack them on the behind a few times, and get their attention.
That was their mindset. They interpreted.
Their mindset was interpreted that destructive natural way because it was a little bit carnal.
Well, it's because that's what they always saw before.
Well, before they had no ability to talk anything other than carnal, even though they wrote the scriptures, because they were yet carnal.
That's all they knew, just like Paul said, until I knew it was a sin to
Covet.
He didn't know no better.
And they didn't either. They did the best they could. And that's what we're supposed to see, that he's given us a better way. And now we're seeing that better way. And they shall return to the Lord, and he shall, what? It says, be entreated of them and shall heal them, right? Mm-hmm. But literally it says this, he shall hear their prayers and shall heal them. That's what it literally says. He shall hear their prayers. Verse 23. In that day there shall be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria. literally a higher way, out of Egypt to Assyria. Egypt being Passover, Assyria, Pentecost. And the Assyrians shall come to Egypt and the Egyptian to Assyria. It means they're all become one. Remember the outer court was done away with in the new covenant?
Mm-hmm. No more law.
No more law, no more borders like that. And it says, and the Egyptians shall serve with the Assyrians. That word serve is wrong. Guess what it is? Worship. They shall worship with the Assyrians. It means they're all mixed together. Okay? They're all mixed together.
Is Assyria no?
Pentecost.
Pentecost.
Yeah. Egypt, outer court, dust, sand, you know, worship together.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah. In that day shall Israel be the third, and it should say the third part, with Egypt and with Assyria. There's your Passover, Egypt, Pentecost, Assyria, and Israel's tabernacles. Dust, sand, stars, right? First, second, third days. Even a blessing in the midst of the land. Where is it at? In the midst of the land. What are you? The blessing's in the midst of the land. Inside, not outside. It's internal, not external. It's the mind of Christ itself. That's the tabernacles. Whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, saying, blessed be Egypt, my people. That's your Passover. And Assyria, the work of my hands, Pentecost. And in the Pentecostal realm, everything is do, isn't it? You know what do is and where it should be and where it shouldn't be.
In the
there you go, in the sandbox. And Israel, my inheritance. There's tabernacles. And he's laying out this pattern for us very, very clearly that we have to keep coming up. What does the Spirit say in the book of Revelations? Come on up here and I'll show you a great truth. Keep on coming. Don't get comfortable. I went to a meeting one time in North Carolina to a big conference down in Richlands, North Carolina. And this pastor got up and spoke. He was from New Jersey, I believe, and he was down at Kelly Varner's church. And he said he was speaking against the third day. Well, that's like speaking against one chapter of the Bible or something. He said, I've heard people talk about this for 20 years, and I've seen nothing. And he was real negative about this third day. And he said, the third day is a disease. And you know what God spoke to me? There is a third day disease, but it's also a disease in every day, whether it's Passover, Pentecost, or Tabernacle, with first day, second day, third day. In any realm that you're in, the only disease there is being at ease.
It kills the flesh, I think.
Yeah. But no, I'm saying it's being at ease and you kill the drive when you get comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
See? And he was talking about it, making everybody, and what people were hearing was not necessarily what the people said, or the people might have been saying it wrong. I don't know what he heard for 20 years. But it made him very negative about this. He was very Pentecostal. And he didn't want to hear it. He thought he had already arrived and had it all taken care of.
Of course. We're making him up a little bit.
Yeah.
It could have been where if he didn't understand what they were saying, if he wasn't opened up by God to understand what
right.
they were saying, so he figured if he wasn't getting...
Nobody else could either.
It can't be right.
Right. That's probably where he was at. He was a little bit on the arrogant side. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, any place we get comfortable and think, I have arrived, we just lost it.
We
become one of them stagnant ponds. And that's not good. You know, we got to keep going. We got to keep going. We got to keep going. Just like in the desert, the Jews wandered in the desert 40 years. They never stopped. They just kept going for 40 years until it was time for them to come to the promised land.
You got to keep a teachable spirit.
You got to be flexible in your mind. You got to be able to hear the truth and know that the truth is going to do damage to your thinking idols.
That it says Israel is my inheritance.
There's the key.
That's inheritance is what. What did he tell Abraham?
I am your inheritance.
So we're exactly like him. In the third day.
In this world.
We become exactly like him. And we never quit learning.
No.
Never quit.
Just keep on keeping on.
Getting brighter and brighter and brighter in him and reflecting more and more and more of him.
Yep. Just like Jesus said in the New Testament, in Gospels, he said, in the first 2 days I did miracles and cures, and on the third day I'll be perfected. See, if we stay in them first two realms, the first two covenants, we're never going to come to perfection. We have to come on. Now, it's either now or later. But the ones who come to perfection in this lifetime, in this testing period called life on earth, when we come to this realm, guess what? That's first fruit. We're coming right before the rest of them. See? That's all. They'll all come to it. But wouldn't you much rather have a reward? I've had enough crap out of this world. I don't need to have any in the next life. I'd just soon be on the other side, you know? Be on the good side on the other side. So I'm willing to give up this world for what's to come. Because I don't think this world has a whole lot to offer. You know, it's air, isn't it? It's just something passing through. So if we learn what we're supposed to learn in this life,
it sustains you while you're growing.
That's all it is. It's just made to be used with the, made for the using. That's why I couldn't get the words out. It's just made for the using. This whole world was put here for us to use, not to store up, not to try to save, not to try to save the planet or anything else. It's to use. God will take care of it.
Temporary and unsatisfactory.
Absolutely. Worthless and transitory. Temporary and unsatisfactory.